Good morning, Colorado. Here we go. You ready for this? The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. I'm Gary Bell, along with Brad Pollock. We're here for you. You know that you can give us a call, and we're going to answer your questions on any legal subject. This is not a political show. This is a law talk show. Telephone number 303-713-8255. That's 303-713-8255. And in the mountains, we've got several stations listening to this live in the mountains. You can call us at 970-457-1009. We're here to answer your questions. We're glad to do it. You know, we talk about our website, championsofthepeople.com. People ask us, and you go to our website, and right there on the homepage, it's easy to find. There's a button that you can hit to listen to our entire show on what you need to know before you make the first phone call to the adjuster once you've had an accident. And if you don't have time for that, there's also another button right there, easy to find, that you can hit and get a checklist of what you need to do with regard to the first phone call to the insurance adjuster after an accident. It's easy to follow. You must know. You must have a legal game plan. You must have a strategy. Today at 10 o'clock, our one-hour legal show, injury show on KOA. We're still dealing with the Bell and Pollock mailbag. We got a lot of questions, so we cover the most commonly asked questions, very important questions with extremely important answers, and this is the second in our series of the Bell and Pollock legal mailbag. That's at 10 o'clock this morning on KOA. Joining us live right now on KHOW is Tom. Good morning, Tom. How are you?
Oh, good.
Good. What can we do for you?
Well, my wife and I were at Costco, and we scraped the bumper on the car. And the person wasn't around, and so we left a note saying what happened and that we would pay for it. And it's probably, you know, not too much money, but, you know, a few hundred dollars, maybe could be a little more.
Right.
And then we got I got a voicemail from the police. They wanted to talk to us. So I was wondering what one's obligations are when something like that happens in a parking lot, and if it's necessary to talk to the police or file an accident report, or just what has to be done.
Okay, a couple of questions, and we'll see if we can help you. So when did this happen?
2 days ago.
2 days ago, and you've already received a call from the police, Denver police, right?
Sheridan, actually.
Okay, Sheridan, sorry. And so you've not talked to the police?
No.
And all they did was leave a message, they want to talk to you?
Yeah.
Well, you can talk to them, or you don't really have to talk to them, but one way or the other, they should have, or when you talk to them, if they think that you've committed some kind of criminal activity or illegal activity, they should properly advise you of that. Then you have certain rights kick in. But basically in Colorado, if you hit an unattended vehicle or other property and it's damaged, you have some responsibilities. One of them can be, you know, the primary responsibility, or the first responsibility they want you to do is locate and notify the operator or owner of the vehicle or the owner of the property. But one of them can be, as an alternative, is to securely attach a notice to the property in a conspicuous place, which you did, leave your name, address, and registration number of the vehicle you were driving. Now, in this case, I'll bet you didn't leave the registration number. You may not have left your address, but I'll bet you left your name and a telephone number.
Right.
And so I think you're going to be okay. You did the admirable thing and the responsible thing of leaving a note telling them, look, I hit your car, I'm sorry. You don't know where the person was, or when you hit them, you made reasonable efforts to make sure that they knew who they could contact. The person contacting the police, may or may not have been contacting them. So they made sure they have a record with their insurance company and they had an appropriate record to protect them. But I don't think you're going to have a problem at all. And I think you did the right thing. What I do think is a good idea. I'm sorry.
Sorry. No, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, I was going to say what I do think is a good idea is that before we get off the line, I'm willing to talk to you as much as you'd like, is you leave your number and you let one of our attorneys call the police the Sheridan police and make contact with them and just discuss what they are, what they want. A lot of times all the police officer is going to say is we want to talk to the guy, but let's make sure, you know, no good deed goes unpunished, but let's make sure we can help you on this one for doing such a great, great thing. Because a lot of people would have hit that car and just driven off.
Right. And the other thing, Tom, is I want to say, it brings up another point. And there are very strong state statutes in this state and other states that when you have an accident and you have an injury, which you did not have, you had property damage and you did the right thing. But when you have an accident, you have injury. If you leave the scene or a hit and run, it's a felony. And if you don't go back and attend to the people, it's a felony. And so there are laws and requirements and duties and obligations. But you did the right thing. And that is a great idea and a great suggestion Brad made to you, because we can call. They'll be talking to an attorney. They can't ask you questions. And even though it seems like a minor matter and it seems like you left the notes, you're going to do the right thing. Don't know what this person was doing contacting the police. And they never contacted you, correct?
No, the person did, actually, yeah.
Oh, what did they say?
Well, I said to them that I would pay for the damage.
Right.
And they wanted me to come down and meet them down there and discuss it with them. And I said, no, I didn't want to do that. I was gone. But just let me know what it is, and I'll send you a check.
One more question. Did you take any pictures of the damage?
No, I should have. No, I didn't.
Right. Yeah. That would have been a good idea.
You should always do that. And, you know, always take pictures. But, you know, I don't know why the person wanted to meet with you, unless they think there's something bigger than this. Obviously, you don't think it's even a big enough damage to call your insurance company. So.
Well, yeah, I'd prefer not to. And that's why I was worried about that. If, like, they call their insurance company and then their insurance company calls my insurance company. I'd rather pay for it myself than have it go through my insurance. Could cost me more in the long run.
Right. Well, what the insurance company will do is, if they contact their insurance company, that insurance company is going to contact you, the bottom line. And on something like this, since you're saying you'll pay and you're willing to pay, people are making a big deal out of something on a person saying, I'm going to do the honorable thing. I left a note.
Yeah.
I'll pay for the damage. Let's get it taken care of.
There's nothing about your comment, your question, your call, your situation that makes me feel comfortable. Nothing. This should be handled easily. The police now want to interview you. We'll be glad to help you. I'm going to put you on hold. If you give Kevin your information, we will call you. We'll set it up. We'll be glad to call the police, and we'll see what we can do for you, okay?
Thank you.
Yeah, let's help you out here.
Tom, thanks for calling our show.
Thank you.
Sure, we'll be glad to help you. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. You can go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. Also today at 10 o'clock, every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock on KOA. We have a one-hour-long injury show. Today we're talking about the Bell and Pollock Legal Mailbag. What does that mean? People ask us questions all the time about accidents. And when they come to us a year after the accident or a year and a half after the accident, the questions sometimes are not correctable. The answers and solutions are not correctable on that very part. So we're going to be covering those today. We did it last week. We're going to do it today. That's 10 o'clock, KOA, Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. We'll be right back. Here we go. Fasten your seatbelt. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, we're here for you. 303-713-8255, 713-8255. A preview of the movie with regard to some of our upcoming shows. One of the shows is going to be on opioid and abuse. And what does it all mean? How does it work? What's the distribution system? What's the Controlled Substances Act? And how does it work with the government enforcement or no enforcement under the new 2016 lobbying efforts? And if you have a family member that has been affected by opioid use, you're going to want to listen to our show, and that's upcoming. We've got other shows on product liabilities and pharmaceutical issues coming up as well. the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Right now from Denver, Sally, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. What can we do for you?
So I have a question for you. I have worked with a really large construction company here in Colorado, and I paid money, and the work was not complete. So I was wondering if I can file a civil claim and still file a criminal complaint.
Okay. Well, you're asking two questions. Generally, you can file both claims, both a criminal claim and a civil claim. Now, you can go complain, and it sounds like what you're saying on the criminal side is the company took money without doing the job they were supposed to do?
That's correct.
And did they take it as an advance, and then they did not pay, or they did not do the job, or they did not follow through with the work, thus not giving you back your advance money?
That's correct.
Okay, and that money is received, as we all know, or it sounds like you know, as trust fund monies in essence. And they do have a responsibility to properly account for that money. So, yes, you can go do a criminal case. If you're going to do a criminal case, you're going to, I would start by contacting the DA's office in your particular county and telling them that it's your intent to also do a civil case. And, yes, you can also do a civil case, but there's nothing wrong with having them both run at the same time. One may step on the other, if you understand what I mean by that.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons it may step on one may step on the other is because once you file the criminal case, you know, the DA wants to pursue that if they decide to do it. But on the other hand, when you're wanting to get information on the civil side of the case, the contractor can easily claim some type of right to remain silent pursuant to his Fifth Amendment rights, saying I'm being charged criminally for this case also. And therefore, it can delay your civil case or they can step on each other as far as what information you can get.
Okay. And do you know what designates, like, the dollar amount between a misdemeanor and a felony on, like, what would be filed on this?
Okay, well, under the statute, there's a Colorado statute. I assume that you've already researched the part of the statute, right? Or maybe you haven't, so it doesn't matter. So the contractor holds the money in trust, and before we get to the answer to that particular question of yours, I wanted to give my input on this because a lot of contractors, they do a job here 3 weeks ago, they don't pay anybody, they get a new person, a new job now, and get money from you now, and then they use your money to go pay the previous job. And is any of that part involved, or they just didn't do your work?
I'm not exactly sure if he used my money on another job or whatever. I just know that mine didn't get done.
Okay, and the other thing I want to tell you is, and Brad said contact the DA, you also want to probably call the police because many times they assign a detective to the situation, comes out and talks to you, and sometimes the district attorney doesn't want to deal directly with you initially, and they want it to be investigated. So okay. as far as the amount of money, the statute that I know about on the trust fund, he doesn't contain a specific amount of money.
The trust fund, that's right. And on the criminal side, you can get additional money as a violation of the trust fund. My understanding, of the last time I dealt with this, has been a while, is that when you're dealing with theft crimes, and this is in essence a theft crime.
Correct.
A class two misdemeanor. When the value is less than $500, it's class two misdemeanor. If the value is $500 or more, but less than $1,000, it kicks into a class one misdemeanor. So you're under 500, then 500 to 1,000 is a class one misdemeanor. If it's 1,000 or more, going all the way up to, I believe, about 20 grand, it's a class four felony. So that $1,000 is the last time I saw was your cutoff point, which I think subjects most contractors to violation of the trust fund rules that are out there. And it also puts them in a felony because I've seen very few contractors that take less than $1,000.
Absolutely.
You know, so it just happens. And you know, I will say this, I don't know who it is. I'm happy to talk to you off the air about some of this. Most contractors don't even understand what they're doing when they get involved in this. And it doesn't forgive them from the crime. As a matter of fact, it makes it even worse in my mind But, you know, the contractors don't understand that when they're taking this deposit, a lot of these contractors really believe, or they just proceed with their business believing they can take your deposit and use it to pay on a job they've got going on. And they can just commingle these funds and not keep separate accounts and not keep separate transactions and just run with the money and do what they're doing.
Well, you know, in the statute 3822.127, as long as we're talking about it, says all funds dispersed, and has a bunch of other legal language, but all funds dispersed, the contractor has to use to pay the subcontractors, the material men, the laborers, etc. So did in your situation, Sally, did they not do any work? Did they do part of the work? And has anybody filed a lien against you? Where are we on that?
So they did some of the work, and I'm not really going for the work that they, you know, the money that backed that they work they did.
Right.
But they didn't complete what they said they were going to do.
And you paid for it.
Yes.
Yeah. And this is prime, and now you can't get them to come back out to the job. You can't get them to, they won't answer the phone. They won't honor anything they're doing. And the other problem you got that, you know, we may not be able to resolve is that they carry the warranty on a lot of this work too. You know, they promise it's going to be done in a workmanlike manner. And if there's any warranty work that needs to be done on it in the future, you're not going to get it done. They've just walked off the job and they took your deposit and they used it for other purposes.
But, you know, bottom line, the statute speaks about theft, but I'd like to ask you, have you contacted the contractor? And if so, what did they say, or did they say nothing?
I've tried to contact him on several occasions, asking him just for the money back. And,
right.
You know, there's just no answer, no response, not even any acknowledgement whatsoever.
Okay, we can help you. We're going to help you. So if you don't mind, we're going to put you on hold, okay? And if you give Kevin your information, we're going to give you a call. Maybe an attorney demand letter on your behalf to the contractor will get things moving. If not, then we can help you and guide you with the following steps.
Okay.
Okay, right. Sally, thank you for calling our show, ma'am.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to put you on hold. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. We've got a lot of calls this morning. We're going to take them in the order in which they've come. Right now, we're going to talk to Sam. Good morning, Sam. What can we do for you?
Good morning, gentlemen. Timely caller, I think, here as a contractor. I wondered about deposits and proper lay listing on a contract for work done at someone's home. It's an oversight on our part that the contractor's name that arranged, let's say, the apple doors on a home to get replaced, their name is on our contract that we email out to the homeowner, who presumably reads everything carefully and has signed and has offered the down payment we've asked for, and it's got a check sent to us in the mail. But I wondered, I wondered if it's an enforceable contract, because we don't have the right name at the top under sold to. It's the contractor, not the homeowner.
Okay, so you are the contractor, sir?
Correct.
And then you send out the contract in the mail, and whose name should be on the contract? Do you think, and what name is on the contract?
The homeowner's name ought to be there, because they're the one where the product's being installed. They're the ones paying for it. It's just that it was arranged for by their contractor, and their name is on the top instead of the homeowner. And so I thought, well, this it seems that we've made this kind of mistake in another instance. Then it's if they don't have the properly named parties to a contract, my thinking is this is not legally enforceable. I don't think I'll have a problem. We never have in the past, but I thought I'd give you a call and see if anybody else would benefit from this knowledge.
Who signed the contract?
The homeowner.
Okay.
Did he sign there?
Huh? So what I'm envisioning here, and tell me if I'm wrong here, I understand, but what I'm envisioning here is you have kind of like a regular contract where you fill in the forms, like a form contract, you fill in names. And what happened is where the homeowner's name should have gone, they put in the contractor's name. So you got
our people did, yeah. We put in the contractor's name. That's who met us on site. That's who picked everything out for the benefit of the homeowner, because the homeowner's letting them are making all the arrangements. So, again, this has happened before. It's never been a problem. But I'm thinking, and am I right in saying this is not legally enforceable because that – it doesn't have the homeowner's name there, or does it make it enforceable once we get their deposit check with their name on it, checked it, cashed and cleared, half down, non-cancelable is what it says on there. Does that change anything? Putting, you know, that we got money down by the person who should have had their name.
Okay, Sam, you got a fascinating question. So we got a break coming up, but right before we go to the break, and I'm going to want you to hold during the break, So we're talking about contract law. Got an offer and acceptance. We got parties that can be and are identifiable, and especially if you get the deposit from the homeowner signed the contract. We know, and you know, the contract is for that person, that homeowner's home. Okay, yep. So we're getting down to the details of the contract on the offer and acceptance, and we're going to answer the rest of it right after the break. Can you hold with us?
Absolutely.
Okay, we appreciate your question. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, today at 10 o'clock. Don't forget our one-hour injury show on KOA, 8:50 a.m. We're talking about the Bell and Pollock Legal Mailbag. That means questions that we get all the time in car accident cases and injury cases and trauma cases that are very important for you to know the answers way in advance. Bell and Pollock. We'll be right back.
I'm not the only soul accused of hit and run. Tire tracks.
Good morning. Here we go. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. We've been doing this show for years, and we're glad to do it for you. 303-713-8255. If you have somebody in your family that has been affected by opioids and prescription drug abuse, you need to give us a call. So many people and billions of dollars a year are spent across the United States with regard to treatment, and it's coming to a head. And there's something that you can do about it. And there's MDLs, that stands for multi-district litigation. We're going to do a show on opioids and how it affects you and your family. Before we go any further, we're going to talk to Eric at Caitlin's. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning. How are you guys doing today?
Good. What's going on?
We got some new specials we're going to try out. We use this stuff on our buffet, so we're going to go with some spicy chicken tacos, and we're going to run those for breakfast and lunch. So that breakfast special is going to be two spicy chicken tacos with scrambled eggs inside, cheddar jack cheese, of course, that lettuce, tomato, guac, and sour on the side. We're also going to serve that with some golden brown hash browns. That's a real good, tasty breakfast special. We're going to see how that goes. And then at lunch, you're going to get three of those spicy chicken tacos. Again, you get the lettuce, tomato, the guac, and sour on the side. And, of course, you guys can always get our scratch-made red or green chili right on top of that, or have that on the side as well. That's going to be the lunch special. We're going to run both of those for the next 2 weeks. And, guys, don't forget, on Mondays and Fridays, we're still going strong with that all-you-can-eat taco burrito buffet. Every Monday, every Friday from 11 to 2, it's all-you-can-eat. It actually includes a non-alcoholic beverage in the price, and that price is under 10 bucks, guys. So that's a great deal to come and check out right there. The deck's a great thing to come check out today. The umbrellas are up. The flat screens are on. A beautiful Colorado weather to come enjoy. Wonderful scratch-made products at Caitlin's Restaurant to enjoy. So come on down and check us out if you haven't done so already, guys.
Sounds fantastic, Eric. I'm on my way, bud.
Hey, Eric, where are you located?
Guys, we're 4379 East Mississippi Avenue. Now, that's one block east of Colorado Boulevard, and that is the Glendale Shopping Center. Come and check us out.
All right, thanks, Eric.
Thanks, guys.
All right, the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. You can call us 303-713-8255. Welcome to all of our stations, KRDO in Colorado Springs, KRAI in Craig, KEZZ in Steamboat Springs, and KHOW right here in Denver. We're glad to answer your questions. And don't forget about the show that follows our show. That's a consumer real estate show, Barry and Larry. They answer all kinds of questions. I know that they did a back-to-school special. You know, they got questions on how you should market your house, buyer, seller, when, what to do in the contract, what to do in inspection. So that's the show that follows our show. Right before the break, we were talking to Sam. Sam, you still with us?
I certainly am.
Okay, we were talking during the break, Brad and I, where your call is a wonderful call, incredible call. Thank you very much, because you seem like you want to do the right thing, and you have this contract you sent out to the homeowner. It has the contractor's name in the contract, but then the homeowner signed the contract. So Brad and I both have the same opinion. You've got an enforceable contract. Why and how does that work? Because you've got the parties identified. You've got the signatures. Beats the statute of frauds. So it's all signed up. It deals with a specific subject, an identifiable subject, i.e. the house, the home, where the work's going to be done. It identifies a general description of the work. And so you got an enforceable contract. But we also think the details needed to be cleaned up. And maybe it's as simple. I don't think you have to do anything, in my opinion.
I don't think so either.
Right. Maybe it's as simple as just changing the name on the contract and having the homeowner initial it.
That's kind of what I thought until the homeowner happened to self-identify as a high-powered attorney and said, you guys do what you got to do on your end. Having mailed me a check, maybe I'll just stop payment on the check. I'm like, what? Where did that come from? So that's what made me generate the question. Do I or don't I have a legally enforceable contract? Because I'm not going to court.
No.
I'm just going to send the money back to the guy and say, have a nice day. I don't need any trouble. Skip it.
That's, that's an incredible sequel to the story. I'm so glad you told us that. That's unbelievable to me. We think you have an enforceable contract.
Yeah, I don't think you... The intent was there. There was a mistake in the formation or in the names being put on the contract. When it was signed by the homeowner at the bottom, the homeowner understood what they were doing. They gave
Let me jump in if I might. Is the e-sign enforceable? Because that's how we did it. All electronic. We have theoretically the ISP of that person.
Absolutely.
Sure, of course.
E-sign is enforceable too.
Yes.
And does the fact that it says special order non-cancelable carry any weight? As far as that half down, can they ask for their money back even though they initialed it, and they did, and it says special order non-cancelable on our contract, very bold in the front?
I think it is, and let me tell you, I think what a court would do, though, it'll say special order non-cancelable. The court may very well say, did you make the special order already? And if you're already...
Absolutely.
If you're already down the...
I'm saying we may have. Let's say we did. Then
okay.
What?
If you did, the court's going to look and say you're out the money. It was intent to be a contract. All the reasons are there for it to be a contract. And I think the court's going to make sure you get compensated for the money you're out on the special order.
And you identified what you did, and you took action to your detriment. Now, Sam, we got another part of the question here, okay? Because when you told us this guy's an attorney and he's making all kinds of accusations against you, so you just said I'm just going to return his money. Well, we need to talk to you off the air, okay? Because if you return his money, he might then say you have a contract. You
still,
yeah. See, that's very fascinating. So you got to do the right things right now. I'm so glad you told us the other part of the story.
Yeah, because I said that recently we had the similar situation. I just had to have my people be more careful and simply type whoever we want to engage as the person listed on the contract instead of the contractor who is a third party, somewhat disinterested. And the other thing that got me a little bit funny on this is when I threw the call out to the contract and said, hey, maybe we don't have a problem here, maybe we do, but how about you just set me up with a credit card from your company in the meantime? You work with this guy for a long time, and we'll just hold that in case there's any issues. And he didn't want to do it. So,
we've got to give you a game plan on that, because you can't just walk away because he might say you breached the contract.
Yeah, I never considered that, so I am glad I called you.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm going to put you on hold, Sam, and we're going to contact you, and we're going to walk you through this.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling.
Gary, the little thing, you put Sam on hold, but
right.
there are huge competing interests in this, and I want to make sure everybody understands that we're sitting here giving out information to people and giving them ideas, but there are huge competing interests. And the huge competing interest is the contractor needs to make sure they're going to get paid by the homeowner, by the person contracting for the work, and the person that is contracting for the work needs to make sure that they're going to get the job done. And that's what the purpose of these contracts are for. And when you start working with deposits, you got to be really careful.
Right.
And especially when it's special order items you're getting. So
special, and I don't know what the stats are, the statistics are on this, but I can imagine it's very high that a lot of legal problems arise out of contract disputes with regard to home work on your home.
It's tremendous.
It's got to be.
And a lot of this is, lack of knowledge on both sides. And I can't impress people enough. If you're going to be contracting for stuff to be done around your home or to be done, look up the contractor, do your research, do the best you can, try and find out about the contractor, and look up some of the basic stuff on the internet if you have to, about what you need to have in a contractor, what you want to do to protect yourself with regard to the contractor doing the job right. Don't get into the contractor a lot of debt. Don't let them get ahead of the billing where you've given them a lot of money and you're not getting the work done. And the contractor is exactly the same thing. Don't get sucked into where all of a sudden you're upside down so much that when the homeowner decides not to pay you, you're not going to get your money. You're going to have problems because it can swing both ways.
It sure can. And that's a detailed, intricate area of the law. You shouldn't try to just guess. And as we always preach on the injury side of of our equation on our daily business, you need a legal game plan. We have a book entitled Legal Game Plan, but it would apply to any situation. You need a strategy. You need to know what you're doing. You need to point your legal compass to true north.
And this is a big issue now because they talked about the thousands of home claims that are being made now for hail damage and what's going on with people coming in to fix your property from the hail damage. Now, a lot of time, your own insurance company is going to be your best friend for the homeowner as far as saying, we're not issuing a check until we make sure the work's done, and they don't like the contractor, or they're making sure the work gets done before to proper standards before a check gets issued. But if the insurance company just turns over the money to you, you got to make sure the work gets done. And once again, research your contractor, get an idea what they're about, and get some understanding of what you need to do. And contractors that come in and immediately demand a whole lot of money up front, you might want to think twice about using them.
Yeah, absolutely. The contractor situation needs to be, you need to know the basics before you enter into the contract. Dealing with hail damage and insurance companies, many times that kicks over into the law of bad faith. Is the insurance company operating in good faith or bad faith? We've done shows on that. We do it from the injury perspective, but it applies to your house. It applies to hail damage. It applies to an adjusting of an insurance claim for you, and so you need to know. Okay, Bell and Pollock, we've got an opioid show coming up. We're working on that. If you have an issue with opioid abuse, prescription drug abuse, the laws pertaining to that, if you've got a family member that's been affected, it's all over the United States. We'll be glad to help you. We're trying to get all of your calls and the question in the area, the order they've come. And you can go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. It's an information-loaded website. We're glad to do that for you. All of our books are there. You can download a free copy of an e-book anytime, free copy. If you want a free hard copy, just call our law firm at 303-795-5900. Champions of the People. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. This is the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. We're here for you, 303-713-8255. Our show today at 10 o'clock, 1 hour injury show. Every Saturday, the Champions of the People Legal Injury Show on KOA at 10 o'clock deals with the Bell and Pollock Legal Mailbag. Questions we ask all the time, questions that make a difference in people's lives once they've been injured. And so you can listen to that today. Right now, we're going to talk to Ann from Parker. Ann, good morning, and thank you for holding, ma'am.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My question is it okay if I have my kids individually named on bank accounts as joint owners with right of survivorship?
Sure, of course it is. And that bank account card constitutes a contract. And that whole thing about naming somebody else on the bank account card originated out of a New York case way in the early days. It's called a Totten Trust, T-O-T-T-E-N, called a Totten Trust, and it's very enforceable. And in many instances, it can be changed. So, yes, I take it you'd put their names on the card, Ann?
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay, and how did your question arise then, ma'am?
Well, I'm changing my will, and my lawyer says I've got to have these bank accounts in the trust, and I don't see any reason to have them in the trust if their name is on as joint owner.
Well, before Brad gives you his take, just remember it's going to be joint owner. It's going to be joint tenancy.
Yeah. Without knowing the entire trust, plan and what the lawyer is trying to do, and why he wants it in the trust. It sounds to me like what you're doing is when you say your kids on individual accounts, is that you've devised a mechanism where you have different bank accounts and you've got your kids on different ones according to which kid you want on which one.
Right.
And whichever child is on that account is going to have a right of survivorship. And I see nothing that makes you have to change that.
Okay.
Once again, we're working a little bit in the dark because I don't know what plan the lawyer has on the trust. And the lawyer, he or she, should be giving you a really good explanation for why you need to change this, because not everything has to go through the trust.
And that's what I thought.
Right. And it doesn't have to go through a trust. You don't have to put it through a trust. A trust can be for specific property, for limited amounts of property, for all the property. And when I say property, I mean assets, including bank accounts. or they can be for individual, or you can have individual accounts. And if you've got it set up and it's working, the one thing I would take a look at is if it's a checking account, let's say, and if that child, if their name's on it, they can write out checks. Mm-hmm. Then if the child overdraws the account, mm-hmm. you could be on the hook for what they overdrew the account for.
Sure. You know. I haven't given them any checks. They've just gone in and signed the card and all of that, and we set it up.
Probably
and
the way you want to leave
names
it.
On it.
Yeah, but probably the way you want to leave it is that they you don't really have them being able to get into the account and spend the money.
Right.
But at the same time, yeah, you're fine.
But the other thing, Ann, the bottom line questions you need to ask your attorney are basically two questions in my mind, and in your own mind. Is the way it's set up, is the property, your checking account, is it going to go to who you want it to go to?
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's number one, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so I don't want to change my will or trust, but that's the question. Is it going to go to who you want it to go to? Now, number two, many attorneys do this for tax purposes. So maybe there's a tax-related benefit to you by putting the bank account through a trust, as opposed to just leaving it the way it is and keeping it separate and apart from the will. All right.
Okay.
So those are the bottom line questions. If it's left by to its own devices, just left alone, or is the property going to go to who you want it to go to? Number one. Number two, is there some kind of tax benefit that you're thinking about when you want me to put this through the trust? Right.
Okay, I'll ask him that then.
Right, because without a good explanation, if it's just, well, I just wanted the trust, so the trust runs everything, you don't have to do that. In essence, what you're doing is you're making specific financial gifts to each child that is potentially there in the event of your death,
mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Okay.
You can do
good.
It. It's your
That's
money.
That's what my mother did, so I'm following in her footsteps.
You sound like a wonderful lady. Thank you for your call, ma'am.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, goodbye. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, you can call us right now. We have a line open, 303-713-8255. That's 713-8255. I'm just amazed. The more we get into the opioid abuse and distribution and selling of opioids, the history, the legislative history, the statutory history, the acts that were done, the prompting and outright fabrication of certain documents and studies indicating that opioids were safe and the drugs were safe and they were non-addictive. And if you think tobacco was a big issue in the day, opioid abuse, misuse, misrepresentation, and sometimes outright fraudulent schemes. I mean, think about this. Certain players in the drug industry, you know, successfully promoted the fiction that drugs with mechanisms similar to heroin were safe. And what, how they did it with these medical studies, right? And if you ever saw these medical studies, you'd probably fall off of your chair. You can give us a call at 303-713-8255. Today, our show on KOA at 10 o'clock, 1 hour show every Saturday morning. Today, we're doing part two of the Bell and Pollock Legal Mailbag. And you know, Brad, we get a lot of questions. People come in, and one question we got recently, somebody came in and said, you know, I was injured 6 months ago, and we were going over the health insurance, and they said, I didn't know I could use health insurance to pay for my injuries from a car accident. I didn't know health insurance would pay my medical bills. How does that work?
It most certainly you can use health insurance. As a matter of fact, if you don't have insurance from any other source, use the health insurance. When you go into the hospital, you give them your health insurance card. You got your MedPay, which you're going to want to use, but you give them your health insurance card, and you tell them to use the health insurance card. And when they say they want the insurance information from the car insurance, you tell them no. Say, take my health insurance. That's what I have health insurance for, and this is what it's for, and here's my card. It's pretty complicated to get into for the next couple minutes we have available on the air right now, but there's some good reasons why they want to go through the car insurance, and they want to do that because they're going to make more money, and you want to have your health insurance cover it because that's going to be the best for you.
I tell you what, you've been injured in a car accident, you go to the emergency room, you go to the hospital, and they say to you, we don't need your health insurance card. There should be all kinds of sirens going off in your head. There should be a vision of a freight train coming right at you, a legal freight train that's going to demolish your rights. When was the last time you went to a hospital injured and they said, we don't want your health insurance card? And we've done a whole show on this company called Avectus. And there's a statute created in new in Colorado, relatively new, covering this situation. because the hospital doesn't want to bill your health insurance company, right? Why? They don't want to bill your health insurance company. Let's say your medical bills were $12,000 at the emergency room, right? If they bill your health insurance company, they might be paid $7,500 out of the $12,000. This is just one thing that we're covering in the Bell and Pollock Legal Mailbag. Every week we get these questions, and throughout our career we've got these questions. You know, Brad, and let's just talk a second about Avectus, because when you go to the emergency room and they say, you know, we don't need your health insurance card, that's a siren. But here, go talk to this person over, this lady, nice lady over here, and she'll help you out when we don't need your health insurance card. And so give a flavor of what these questions are going to be asked.
Well, Avectus is going to be asking questions strictly to be able to access. Once again, they're going to want to be going after the car insurance money from the at-fault party. And they're going to get in the way of your case. And Avectus will actually get in the way of your case to a point where they're going to damage your case. They're going to give information out that you can't control. They're going to take their own methods of communicating with the other side. You want to stop them. You should never, ever, ever get involved with Avectus without having your lawyer take a look at it.
That's just one of the subjects we cover in the Legal Mailbag, Bell and Pollock Legal Mailbag Show. We did our first part last Saturday. We got part two coming up today at 10 o'clock on KOA 850 on the AM dial. That's 10 to 11 every Saturday morning. You can give us a call anytime if you've got a question. If you've been injured, you can go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. It's an information-loaded website. All of our books are there if you want them free. We'll give you a free legal book. You can download an ebook free right there. If you want a hard copy, we've got them right in our law firm. We send them out every week to different people when they call us and ask us they want it. Some people can drop by our law firm to get a free copy of the book. We're glad to do that. And if we had time, we'd buy you a cup of coffee. Bell and Pollock, champions of the people. We'll see you next week. Upon her head.